This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
Thank you. Senators John Barrasso of Wyoming and Joe Donnelly of Indiana are introducing legislation to repeal EPA's proposed Waters of the U.S. rule. This legislation would require EPA and the Army Corps to withdraw the rule and rewrite their proposal with consideration of stakeholders and review of economic and small business input. It also requires EPA to adhere to definitions included in the bill, which would limit the reach of a new rule. The American Farm Bureau Federation will accept applications for the Rural Entrepreneurship Challenge June 1st through June 30th. This is the second year of the challenge, which provides an opportunity for individuals to showcase ideas and business innovations. Entrepreneurs will compete for $145,000 in startup funds. They must have an idea for a business that is related directly or indirectly to food and ag. Competitors must be based in a rural community, as defined by the U.S. Census Bureau, and located in a county with less than 50,000 residents or a town with less than 2,500 residents. The top 10 teams will be announced on October 15th. Six teams will win $10,000 in startup funds, and four finalist teams will win $15,000. The four finalists will compete in a live competition at AFBF's 97th Annual Convention in Orlando in January. Farm Bureau will work to connect top-scoring teams with resources for crowdfunding loans to help them jumpstart their businesses. For more information, you can visit strongruralamerica.com/challenge. Various state law proposals have been advanced to require labeling of foods produced with biotechnology. The rationale provided is there is a consumer right to know when food is produced with biotech. Corn Refiners Association president and CEO says this is an excuse, not a reason.
It is an excuse because there are already countless products labeled as GMO-free or organic. Over the last 5 years, the fastest growing food label claim has been GMO-free. So people who seek to avoid foods produced with biotechnology have no problem whatsoever finding that food.
Bodie says it's an attempt to discourage biotechnology use in agriculture.
Some of the advocates for this labeling are just philosophically opposed to the use of biotechnology. Others have a financial interest. When you look to see who is funding the effort to drive these so-called GMO labeling initiatives, they are some of the players in the organic food industry. Why would they do that? They obviously feel that it would help them sell organic foods if other foods are labeled in a way that discourages consumers from buying them.
Bodie says the greatest gap between the opinion of the general public and scientific experts is foods developed with biotechnology. He says people tend to fear what they don't understand, even though USDA, FDA, and other leading authorities say foods produced with biotech are safe.
Consumers, unfortunately, don't understand this well, and they don't understand that there are numerous benefits. Biotech crops variously use less land, water, pesticides, and result in higher yields. Biotechnology has boosted farm income by nearly $65 billion over 15 years because of increased productivity and efficiency. By increasing productivity, biotechnology has helped reduce the price of crops used for foods such as corn, soybeans, and sugar beets by as much as 15 to 30%. Now that's nice in the U.S., but in some other parts of the world, it's a lifesaver.
Experts project agricultural production will need to increase by 70% by 2050. Bodie says doing so without biotechnology is unimaginable. Many other ag groups are supportive of federal GMO labeling, recognizing that consumer demand for these labels is creating state label laws that make interstate food trade more of a hassle by necessitating label changes from state to state. Facing this situation, about 400 ag groups recently wrote to Congress asking for implementation of federal labeling rules. That's all for part one of this afternoon's Farm Show. Stay tuned for part two, coming up after this. Now is the time for corn farmers to start paying attention to the spring migration of the black cutworm. Todd Gleason reports the moths wing their way to the Midwest every year.
The black cutworm rides the southerlies, north into the Corn Belt. The female moths look for farm fields lush and green, mostly with weeds. Winter annuals are the favored nesting ground, says University of Illinois Extension entomologist Mike Gray.
They go into those fields, they lay eggs on those weeds, and eventually, when those fields are planted, many of the surviving black cutworm larvae will move off those weed hosts onto corn seedlings. And corn fields that are still in that 1 to 4 leaf stage are very susceptible to cutting.
If those cuts are made below the growing point of the corn plant, then it dies. Most of the cutting, says Gray, takes place overnight or occasionally on a very overcast, dark, cloudy day.
But growers are definitely encouraged to look for early signs of cutworm activity, which would be small pinhole areas on leaves that have been removed by those very small caterpillars, typically in the 1 to 3 instar stage. Once the caterpillars go into that fourth larval instar, they can begin to cut plants.
Many insecticides can be used as rescue treatments if needed to combat the black cutworm. Most BT corn is also capable of protecting the crop, but not in equal measure.
Not all BT hybrids offer the same level of protection when it comes to black cutworms. Some are quite good at providing protection against cutting. But it can be confusing, and a lot of times growers may not be real clear on what protection they have. I encourage growers to avail themselves of a very good resource. It's called the Handy BT Trait Table. It's put out every year by Michigan State University, an entomologist there, Chris DeFonso. And if you just go to Google and type in Handy BT Trait Table, you'll get a very informative table that will enable you to really see if the hybrid that you've chosen offers black cutworm protection.
If the hybrid chosen does not protect against black cutworm, then the farmer will clearly, urges Gray, need to pay much more attention to the life cycle of the insect and potentially gear up for rescue treatments as needed. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
The Illinois Products Farmers Market is set to return to the Illinois State Fairgrounds for an 8th season on Thursday, May 7th. This year, the market moves to its new location at The Shed across from the Lincoln Stage. The market will be held every Thursday from 4 to 7 in the afternoon, with the exception of the two Thursdays during the Illinois State Fair. There are more than 3,200 farms in Illinois dedicated to growing specialty crops. The Illinois Products Farmers Market is a great place to meet some of the men and women driving the specialty crop industry forward in Illinois. Returning again as title sponsor of the market is Springfield Clinic. All season long, market goers will have access to one-on-one sit-downs with specialists in diet and nutrition, orthopedics, dermatology, cardiology, audiology, women's health, sports medicine, and many more. The Illinois Products Farmers Market will once again accept SNAP benefit cards. Program participants just need to bring their cards to the Illinois Department of Agriculture table to obtain tokens that can be used to purchase their desired food items. Senior and WIC coupons available through the Farmers Market Nutrition Program will also be accepted. For more information about the farmers market, including a list of vendors and their products, a schedule of musical entertainment, visiting wineries and food trucks, cooking demos, kids' activities, and the Springfield Clinic Recipe of the Week, you can go online to www.illinoisproductmarket.com. That's all for this afternoon's Farm Show. For WSMI, I'm Angela Besh. Thanks for tuning in.